The Florida community of mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
So what is the mind? So that's an interesting. So you are only aware of me and aware of everything right now because of mind, right? If you were just a body without a mind, well, it sounds like a science fiction movie or something, right? But it's really the mind that is most essential to be a human being. So again, that which sees, that which listens, that which understands, that which knows, that which thinks, this is all your mind, right? All your thoughts arise in your mind. All your stories and dramas arise in your mind. All your emotions arise in your mind. All your yearnings and aversions and desires and goals and planning and happiness, everything is arising in your mind, right? So understanding that and understanding the primary essential place the mind has in kind of the human experience, which we're all participating in, and understanding that whether that journey in life is a meaningful, purposeful, happy journey, or whether it's the opposite, is primarily conditioned by one's mind. And so understanding something about the mind and understanding how to change or transform that which needs to be changed and transformed is essential. And we can attend talks, and we can talk about, and we can read, and we can browse online and all those things. But if we don't really do the work of changing, transforming our mind, we may know a lot, but we may sort of find ourselves continuing in the same situation in life. So, well, let me just give a little description of this mind from the kind of Buddhist psychology, just very simply, but I really want to talk about meditation this morning. So we'll kind of work up. So at the foundation of our mind is just pure awareness. It's like a baby's mind. Pre-language, right? And yet very aware. Anybody's been in the presence of a newborn, you know, even though that newborn has no language, no experience, it is very present. It is very aware. It's quite wonderful. So sort of, and we can talk more about that, but we won't today, but that's sort of basic foundation, ground of mind, this pure awareness is the ground. It's sort of like the earth. This is our ground. I mean, we can keep the earth like here we are in Tampa Bay. If we had showed up here 300 years ago, it wouldn't have looked like this, right? It would have been very simple and natural, right? And there could have been some human beings running around and some animals and everything, but it wouldn't look like this. We have constructed all this, haven't we? This whole thing we call Tampa and Tampa Bay and St. Peter. We've constructed this. What have we constructed it on? The earth, right? This is our creation. Is that clear? We've taken the stuff of the earth and we've worked the materials of the earth and we've created this whole thing. And not only have we created this whole thing, but for many people, they think this whole thing we call Tampa is all there is. We don't see the earth, do we? We don't notice the natural world anymore because we are very busy running around doing what we are doing in Tampa, right? Or St. Peter, wherever we are. So in the same way, even though we came into this world with this kind of pure ground of awareness, this pure ability just to know and to be and have emotions, and we didn't stay that way, did we? Because our mind, this aware mind, has windows, you see, to look out on the world. It sees things, it hears things, it smells things, it tastes things, and it feels things in its body, right? So it's connected to the world. As well as we began to grow, we developed language, right? We learned the names for things. We learned to call this this and that that, right? And then as we developed and as we encountered the world through our senses, we liked some things and we didn't like other things. So we began to have likes and dislikes and preferences. As well as our thinking mind develops, we began to be able to think about the things that we were taking in through our senses, you see. So now we can think about these things. And with a child, it's a fairly rudimentary kind of thinking. But over years, as we have become more adult, we can be very elaborate in our capacity to think about the things that we see and hear and smell and taste, right? And so we develop this quite elaborate thinking, conceptual, story-making, drama-making mind, right? So now at this point, we think about everything. We see, we hear, we smell, we taste, you know, and memories come up. We can think about our memories, you know. We can have thoughts and we can think about thoughts. We just have it. So now we have this incredible, often out of control, because it's kind of on, it has its own life. Our mind has gotten very full. And often the things that it's gotten very full of are not necessarily wholesome things, things that are conducive to our happiness and our well-being and our peace of mind and our open-heartedness and our capacity to be at ease. And you see, the mind has just gotten filled with all kinds of other kinds of stuff, unwholesome things, negative things. Or it's just kind of running around on its own all the time, and we're just trying to somehow keep it all together. Right? Is everybody with me? As well as, not only do we have these senses and this capacity to think, this cognitive capacity, thinking capacity, planning, analyzing, judging, we also have this other thing that's also come along, that's developed from this pure ground of mind that we started out with. And this is a very strong sense of self. Are you with me? That it's not just all this stuff is happening, but there's a central character, me, I. So not only is this everything else going on, but all the thinking, all the liking, disliking, planning, you know, how we are with other people is all filtering through this sense of me, right? I want, I need. And well, there's a self also claims my mind, my body, my this, my that. So everything is me, my, mine, I. Okay? So it's not only just a drama of life, it's also a very personal drama, right, that we identify with and that we're obsessed with. And we're always trying to get the self, is always trying to get itself comfortable. Right? And it's working very hard to essentially get it to a place where it is comfortable, happy, at ease. But it's having to work it all the time. Right? So Therefore, it never really is at ease or happy for very long before things begin to shift and change. I mean, this is kind of a simple, okay? So it is because of this, it is because that we have traveled so far inside ourselves from our essential pure nature, the essential simplicity of our natural awareness and our natural goodness, right? That we have to kind of return back. It's the journey back, the journey back home. It's like we have left home decades and decades, depending on how old you are, wandered around, and now we want to go home, right? How do we get home? How do we get back to our essential nature? How do we unpack all this stuff that's going on, all this baggage, all this emotionality, all these identifications, all these stories, all these dramas, right? Meditation. Now, there are many kinds of meditation in Buddhism, but that meditation simply, it means that I am no longer always looking out. But I'm beginning to attend to that which is looking with, that's always looking without, which is what? Our mind. I want to attend to that. I want to begin to understand that. I want to see it. And I want to develop the tools to transform what needs to be transformed, to change what needs to be changed. Is that clear? So meditation is really the key to transformation and awakening. Transformation into what? Into what we perhaps originally were. In Buddhism, I mean, I think Bill said when we bowed, at the end, he said, we are bowing to the Buddha nature in each of us. This is the essential teaching of Buddhism. This is the essential key awakening that Siddhartha had 2,600 years ago in his great awakening that came from his own introspection, his own meditation, that he realized he came home to his essential nature. He rediscovered who and what he really is. An awakened one, a Buddha. That's what Buddha means. Buddha is somebody who's awakened to their natural mind. And the wonderful thing he discovered was that even though in the journey of life, things seem to have gotten kind of a little bit contaminated or very contaminated, that our essential mind has not. It is still stainless, pure. Right? And the analogy that is often used is like the mirror. You know, the mirror just reflects purely. It reflects whatever appears before it. It doesn't comment. It doesn't have any likes or dislikes. It purely reflects whatever appears before it, right? Now, if that mirror gets covered with dirt, right, you might appear before it and everything is distorted. So you may think, oh, I have to get a new mirror. You see, and many people are like that. We think, oh, I have to get myself a new mind. Right? People have this kind of very negative, some people almost hateful, relationship with their own mind, right? And they think the solution to whatever they're stuck in is, I got to get a new mind. Definitely got to get rid of this one, right? You know, and many people, of course, you know, when they sit down to meditate, they're very disappointed. Why are they disappointed? Everybody here has been meditating today. When you meditate, what do you find? What do you find has come along with you to meditation today? Anybody notice what came along with them? Uninvited. Your mind, just the way it is, right? That's a great disappointment to many people. They go, you know, I've coming to meditation. I drove all this way. I went to the meditation hall. I take a, at least I should, you know, be getting a different mind, you know, something that's quiet and peaceful and only is. But instead, what do we find? We find our mind. And even though we are doing our best to practice mindfulness of the body and the breath, we find that continually this stuff arises, doesn't it? All the stuff. That's because that's where our mind is this day, and it has its own life. It just is continually throwing up the thoughts and the memories and the emotions. It's, right? So it's finally a willingness to understand that I need to return home, and the way I return home to this pure mind that is always there. Again, we don't have to get a new mirror when it doesn't reflect. We just have to what? Clean it. See, that's very easy. Well, I mean, it's, in other words, rather than thinking I got to construct a whole new mirror, oh, I just have to clean away all the contaminations on this one. And then the mirror, you'll see underneath, the mirror still reflects purely, right? It's like having a dirty window, and you go, oh, you don't have to get a new window, do you? But you have to clean it on both sides. And then you look out, and you can see purely again. So in the same way, we need to kind of clear up our minds. How do we do that? Well, there are many ways, but a primary way is through meditation. So when we begin to meditate, we have to learn first to calm the mind. And not, when I say calm the mind, I don't necessarily mean stop thinking. I don't necessarily mean you have to even calm your thoughts. What you have to calm is that part of your mind that's aware of the thoughts. Because that's the part that's disturbed. Is that clear? Let me try that again. Okay? So, lots of activity going on, right? Let's say we're in the hall and all of a sudden I'm sitting here and everybody sort of gets up and starts moving around and jumping around and, right? So all of a sudden there's tons of activity in the hall. Now I can jump up and join all the activity, or I could do what? Just sit here, be aware of it, watch it, let it all happen, not need to stop it, not need to control it, and can I still be at peace, even though everybody else is jumping around? Yes, you see. If I think, as most people think, well, let me get this straight. The only way I'm going to have a peaceful mind in the meditation hall is I got to take care of all these jokers. See, that's the, I got to get all these jokers to sit down, and you know, you see, then I can be peaceful. See, then I can have a calm mind, right? Now that's a lot of work, isn't it? Getting 60, 70 people to listen to me and do exactly what I want. Right? That's a lot of work, and it won't work because somebody's going to, you know, do what they want. It's much simpler to what? To remain calm and clear and stable right here. See, that's doable, isn't it? And that's much easier. So, if I'm sitting here and there's a lot of activity and that's agitating me, I'm not practicing correctly. I'm putting the emphasis on what's going on rather than that which is aware of what's going on. So in meditation, that is why, you know, for those of you who came, you know, we're here for the meditation, the instructions say, don't try to control your mind, but be aware, be mindful of it. Right? You know, busy mind. But that which is aware of busy mind is calm, is observant. I mean, is that clear? It sounds simple, but this is a fundamental mistake that most meditators make. And many people then get frustrated and disappointed because they can't control their minds. But the purpose of meditation is not to control the mind. The purpose of meditation is to understand the mind and to learn how to work with the mind so it only produces for you well-being and ease and calmness and wholesomeness, right? Why don't we stop for a second? Any questions about this? I mean, feel free to ask any questions about anything that's been said here, or to challenge it, or to... let's take a moment, because everybody here was here for meditation this morning. And many of you are here because you either think or have experienced that meditation is something that is good for you. In our culture today, many people, meditation is sort of much more in the popular culture. And so many people, when you mention meditation, they often say, yeah, I should probably be doing that. That's probably good. Yeah, I need to learn. You know, that's, you know. So any questions about what's been talked about so far this morning? Please just check your mind. Don't be shy or embarrassed or... Yes. Yeah, so the question was... They're live streaming this. The question is... how to be mindful during the day. Well, it's sort of the same thing, you see. There's only one mind. You only have one mind. What is your name? Hunter. You see, we only have one mind, right? And wherever you were before you came here today, and where you are now, and where you're going later, it's all being filtered through your mind. It's all your awareness. So we don't want to create different minds. Many people think, oh, I gotta have a mind at home and a mind at work and a mind when I'm out about and a mind when I come to Sangha. You know what I mean? Like different minds, good mind, bad mind, mind I want, mind I don't want. You see, it could drive you crazy with all these minds. But we only have one mind, okay? So your question was very good. Because, Hunter, do you live in a meditation center? No, so you don't spend all your time meditating? No, you spend most of your life doing what? Yeah, running around having a life, right? So your question was very good, because even if you, in terms of your life, kind of brought meditation into your life, you know, when you meditated 30 minutes a day or 60, that's still a very small part of your day, right? And if you kind of begin, as many people do, begin to develop some stability or calmness, right, in your meditation, but the rest of the day it's just a free for all, right? You may again get frustrated, because you may be developing a little bit of calmness or stability or clarity in your meditation, but your daily life could still be out of control, right? Still all kinds of drama and, you know, stress and all that stuff. So. As lay people, you know, people in the world, people active, we need to develop this capacity to bring our meditation or mindfulness with us, so it becomes sort of the way we are. Okay? So, you know, I would say it begins on the cushion, okay? Because, you know, it's like... you know, it's like in science with a lab. You know, everybody remember science and lab? Lab is the place where you can control the conditions to do your experiments, right? Kind of ideal conditions, right? So your, you know, Sangha, the meditation center, your own meditation cushion at home, this is the place, you know, that you have some control over. You know, things can be quiet, stable, somewhat, right? And you can practice doing what we did today, which is, can I develop a place within me that is stable, right? From which I can watch my thoughts, from which I can watch the things that are appearing to my eyes and ears and nose, you know, the whole thing, without getting sucked in, you see. You see, that's, and that takes some skill, because at this point, we're just sucked into it. You know, we're like, in Buddhism, it's called monkey mind. You know, the monkey, you know, you go to the zoo, the monkey, you know, monkey see, monkey do. It's just jumping around, it sees this, it gets out of it, you know. That's the monkey, the life of a monkey. Not very stable. So we want to kind of learn how to develop some ground, some stability, right? So even though we're seeing things and smelling things, or things are happening, we're not constantly thrown off balance, okay? There's some stability. But then you want to take that out in the world. You want to, now how do you do that? I mean, to really develop it, it takes time, but it's sort of the same thing. It's sort of like, you know, when you leave here, Hunter, you will walk to your car, you know? And can you walk to your car, you know, with an awareness that you're walking? You see? You don't lose it immediately. You're kind of, you know, you're still in your body, you're still aware, and you're walking. You know, now you can see things, but there's a, you know, you're kind of grounded. You're still in your awareness of your body, you know? You see what I'm saying? And you sort of, as you go through your life, you try to maintain that ground and that capacity to be present to whatever you're doing, such as, you know, I mean, do you ever cook? Do you eat anything? Yeah, so, you know, you can turn your cooking into a mindfulness meditation. You're just present. You know, you're chopping, you're cooking, you know, rather than thinking about the past and the future or having all kinds of things going on, you kind of, oh, this is nice, you know, I'm really present, right? You see, and when I'm eating, you know, you're present to the taste, you know, so you learn how to move through life by staying mindful that you are still you, you know, you're in your body, you're in your awareness, but you're also present to whatever you're doing. And most of us are not like that. We're going through our day, and even though we're doing, you know, we're brushing our teeth, we're taking a shower, we're doing this, we're cooking, we're doing, you know, we're working, we're thinking. We're thinking about what's happened. We're thinking about this. We're thinking about the past. We're fantasizing about the future. We're expectations. We're running some kind of emotional drama, you see? And we're not present to what we're doing. We're not mindful. So learning, you know, to remind yourself, which is a very big piece that we miss, you see? We read the books about mindfulness, living the present moment, and we go, oh, that sounds great. You know, that sounds great. And that intention to live a mindful life is usually lasts for at least 2 to 3 minutes. Right? And what happens? We forget what we're doing. We forget that just 5 minutes ago we said, I'm going to be mindful, right? We forget. Why do we forget? Because our mind is just conditioned to this kind of dispersion. Right? So, a very key component of mindfulness is not just, you know, it's remembering, it's recollecting to be mindful. That's really more important than the mindfulness. I mean, it is remembering to be mindful. That's the problem with people who've heard all the talks and read all the books and made all the commitments and go, oh, I get it. Be mindful. Sounds wonderful, right? How does it sound to you, Hunter? Good. And Hunter's going to walk out of here, and by 3 days later, he's going to remember, what was that? And it's not because you're a hard case, you see. It's because our minds are not, they're not trained up in it, you see. They're not used to it. And we have to understand that we're having to retrain our mind, you know, and that takes a certain kind of self-awareness, self-discipline. But if we make an effort, you know, to throughout the day find little ways to remind ourselves, right? You know, and a lot of it is the capacity before we do anything to have a little conversation. So you don't mind if I use you, Hunter? So Hunter goes, you know, Hunter knows that when he takes a shower, it's a good time to what? Think about, all right. You see, so now Hunter's going to have to, before he gets in the shower, remind himself, for the next 5 minutes, I really want to be present to the experience of just, you know, showering. You see, he's, you know, and before he cuts the vegetables and before he does this, he's going to have a little conversation with himself, because it's not natural for you, is it, at this point? And that's not a failure. Don't think you're a failure. No, that's what everybody does. All the great masters, that's where they began, right? I mean, where did we learn how to read? Yeah, what grade? Huh? Kindergarten, first grade, second. I mean, you know, that's where we, you know, that's where we learn the fundamentals, right? Once you've learned how to read in elementary school, then you can go on and read all kinds of stuff, can't you? But first we had to learn the skill. How to read, how to identify words. Is that clear? We understand that real learning develops in this way, in this incremental way. And this capacity to change, transform our minds will happen in the same way. But many people, they think that somehow their spiritual transformation, their psychological transformation is going to occur in some kind of miraculous way. But there are no miracles in this. There's just understanding the teachings, understanding the practice, and just practicing it. How do you practice it? You do your best. But I assure you, you're all going to start where you are at right now. Nobody in this room is going to start where they'd like to be. I don't mean to be a wet blanket, you know, but so we begin with mindfulness, mindfulness meditation, mindfulness in daily life. We learn how to concentrate. And it's a process. And again, if the more we do it, the more we remember to do it, the more we recollect what we're supposed to be doing, right? And the more we also, this is another piece of mindfulness, which is we have criteria, which is also important. Which is simply saying, being aware of how you're doing, you see. I often say to people, you know, to just be mindful as you're driving, right? And as, you know, as you drive, you know, over the cliff, to be very aware that you're driving over the cliff is not, you know, is only half of mindfulness. The other half of mindfulness is to know where you are and how you're doing, you see. You know? You know, you can be very mindful that you're driving very well, but if you're not paying attention that you're driving on a one-way street, which I did the other day, made a left turn on Armenia against the traffic. Luckily, I had enough time to see. I hadn't realized that it had changed, you see. So I was very mindful. Luckily, I was mindful that I saw it. But, I mean, in other words, it's not like mindfulness is this blank kind of thing where you're just in the present moment. Right? You have to be in the present moment with some awareness and some criteria. Right? So you have to know, you know, how am I doing? Is my mindfulness clear? Am I present? Am I too tight? Am I too relaxed? Am I sleepy? So when we're doing our meditation, you know, we want to find that balance not too tight, not too loose, not too rigid, not too sleepy, right? That's also part of it, because we want to cultivate a certain kind of mind that we can take wherever we go. It's not just a mind that we cultivate only in meditation or only when we're at the, Florida Community Mindfulness. It's a mind that we are cultivating when we're with people and when we're alone. We're learning how to be present. We're learning how to be mindful of what we're doing. And a very important part of that, even though it often begins externally, like we talked about with showering and eating and walking, the most important thing that we need to learn to be mindful of and aware of is what? What's going on in our mind? Because that's the problem, right? What causes us to be happy and sad? What causes us to be anxious or depressed or worried or all these things or angry? It's our mind. So we have to be aware of our mind. And what's arising in my mind, and whether what is arising is wholesome or unwholesome. You know, good for me or bad for me. So mindfulness of the mind, mindfulness of emotions, and having criteria to know the toxic from the healthy, you know, is key. Again, just to be, you know, just to practice mindful eating without any criteria about, you know, whether this food is good for my body or not good for my body is only half the criteria. Is that clear? Same thing with mindfulness of speech, mindfulness of all these things. We need to have criteria. Because we are doing this process of meditation and mindfulness not as some kind of psychological exercise, but because we what? It's not because we want to be great meditators. It's not because we want to be crowned the king or queen of mindfulness. It's why? Because we want to be good human beings, right? We want to be happy human beings. We want to be balanced human beings. We want to be peaceful human beings. We want to be able to show up in the world, you know, in a qualitative way, right? That's why we're doing all this. It's not like just an end in itself. So it's just not the kind of meditator I am. At the end of the day, it's the kind of person I am. Right? Because if you're a great meditator, but you're still kind of a disgusting human being in how you show up in relationships, it's like, so what? Right? So we have to, we can't lose sight of that. You know, the practices of meditation, the practices of mindfulness, the practices of concentration, the practices of developing the understanding about our minds. There's a purpose to it, right? And that purpose is what this is about, and that purpose is what should fuel us. Because I think oftentimes people, their meditation becomes sort of a blah. You know what I mean? Or kind of neutral, or it's like something they do just because they know it's good for them or they've been doing it. But it doesn't have any enthusiasm. It doesn't have any energy. Right? And that enthusiasm or energy comes because we're meditating because we know how essential it's important it is for becoming the kind of person that I want to be in life, in my relationships, in the world, in my society. So that's very important that we see meditation and mindfulness in the context of the broader movement of our life. Right? I mean, how do we create the basis for a good world? For a kind world? For a compassionate world? Right? Well, we got to begin here. As long as we're looking out there and always being disappointed or frustrated because people are not acting the way I think they should act. Right? But the first question should be, am I acting always the way an awakened person should be? Right? Is that clear? Am I always manifesting the mind of understanding, the mind of compassion, the mind of acceptance, the mind of love? I mean, how can I expect the world to be different if I haven't already discovered that I can be different in the world? Is that clear? It doesn't mean that, you know, we don't make efforts in our society to be of help. But we understand that the world and the way it is created by people. And people act from their minds. And if people's minds are deluded, if people's minds are filled with fear and anger and egocentricity, right, and self-interest, you know, the world will be what it is, isn't it? So we have to kind of take that personal responsibility seriously. You know? And while we're waiting, you know, for the world to be a place of goodness, at the same time, we can become those kinds of people in the world, right? So other questions based on what's been talked about so far? And please, or anybody want to challenge me, please go right ahead. Anybody see it differently? Or any questions you have? I mean, this should be an open... Hunter, you're the only brave person here. Okay, yes, and your name is? What? Name Venkat, okay, yes. The relaxing the?
Relaxing.
Yeah. Is that a good thing? I mean, so I just have to repeat it. So you're saying you have goals in your life and you find there's a driving toward achieving these goals and moving your life in direction, and it seems to be driving you rather than you driving it.
Yeah. I mean,
no, yeah. Oh, they still drive you. Even though you're trying to change or do things differently, you still find that stuff is still driving you from the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, go on. I'm sorry. So the question is, how does relaxing play into that? Yeah. Good question. Yeah. So, I mean, we are not, you know, we don't wake up every day totally brand new beings, do we? We have that potential, but most of us wake up with our stuff. And even if we wake up in the first half hour, an hour, things are pretty clear, we may find as a day unfolds, you know, our stuff comes up, right? And like you said, some of it is recent stuff, but a lot of it is deeper kind of older stuff that just kind of, you know, has always been driving us. Okay, in our life. So that's not going to disappear. That's sort of what we've been talking about. You know, don't be disappointed that stuff is still coming up in your mind, right? It's the key thing is, how are you relating to that? You see, meditation is really about, not about changing. I mean, we can change if we want, but it's really about, how do I relate to that, you see? When it arises now, it may just take over, right? It may just take over because you're relating to it in a very grasping way. It comes and it you know, it's like, you know, what's that joke? You know, somebody's, you know, riding the horse and they're going by somebody really fast, you know, and the guy asks them, hey, where are you going? And the guy says, don't ask me, ask the horse, you know. And I think that's sort of what you're talking about, that it often feels like you're not in the driver's seat. It's this mind of yours is just driving you, that's been conditioned from the past, right? So the first thing is to understand that that's what's going on. I mean, that's important that we understand what's going on, that that's all that's going on. It's not bad. It's just the way it is. Okay. So we're not disappointed. We're not struggling with it. We go, oh, yeah, this stuff is still arising in my mind because it's been there for decades or, you know, a long time. Okay. So when it arises, you're expecting it. Okay. You can name it. Now, how are you going to relate to it? Right? You're going to grab onto it? Or you're going to fight with it, struggle with it, be or you're just going to be aware? So you might say to yourself, in this moment, I am aware that such and such has arisen in me. Okay? And you just are aware of it. You are relaxed. You're not disturbed by it. Why do you get disturbed by it now? Because you don't want it to be there. Right? So we fight. We need to begin with total acceptance of ourself and our minds the way they are. We're here to transform, but we have to begin where they're at. Right? So when it arises in you, this drive or these kinds of thoughts, or, you know, you rather than, again, going with it or struggling or fighting or battling or being disappointed or, no, it's quite simple. I'm aware, you know, that this has arisen in me. Why has it arisen in me? Because of, as you said, past conditioning. That's all. If you disengage and you let it be, you know what? It'll just pass through. Why will it pass through? Because thoughts, feelings, they're all impermanent. They just come and go, right? It's not like you have a steady thought. It's like comes, goes, comes back, right? If you, over time, don't feed it by attending to it, struggling with it, fighting with it, whatever, or giving into it, it will diminish. It has to. Because it's not being fed. It's only big now. Why? Because it's still being fed. Right? So if you stop feeding it, it will, over time, quieter, 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 quieter. At the same time, if you have, you know, at this point in your life, if you have different aspirations, different intentions, you know what I'm saying? And if you're strengthening those, building on those, this will happen. I mean, this mind, when you understand this mind, you see, it works according to very, reliable principles. Just like, it's cause and effect. In Buddhism, everything is cause and effect, right? Why is this arising in you? Because of past causes, right? This is the effect on that. You want different effects in the future? Make different causes now. You'll have a different future. You know, but it's not going to happen overnight, is it? Because you nurtured that strong intentions or aspiration for how long? Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, can you see it? It has its own energy. You see, it's not going to just, one day you're going to say, oh, I'm not going to do that anymore and I'm going to do this now. Yeah, you can go ahead and do that, but don't expect that stuff's not going to still try to get your attention. But that's okay.
Right?
That's what, you know, block the sender is all about. Just don't take the call. Right? They'll give up. You know, but once you get on those calls with those people, right? They know how to keep you engaged, don't they? Keep you on the line. Is that true? So it's better, don't pick it up, right? So that's, yeah, it's like caller ID, except, you know, you're able to identify that there's a mind state that's trying to get your attention, right? And you see, and you name it, and then you don't pick it up. Is that clear? Because once you pick it up, you know, it's more difficult, isn't it? But again, I mean, we're in process, so it could be at this point, you still may find that you're still picking it up, but maybe you'll remember, oh, I can just let it be. So you may not, you know, you may not remember not to pick it up. You may just remember when you picked it up to remember, oh, I don't want to pick it up anymore. So maybe next time you'll do better. Okay, it's a process, and we learn as we go. Okay? Good. Other questions? I know. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. All right, so the question is, he practices breathing meditation at home, but you find that you get easily distracted, right? That's okay. If you're mindful that you've gotten distracted, then you're practicing mindfulness. You see, if we think that I'm only practicing mindfulness when I have everything under control, right? You may find yourself frustrated and disappointed, aren't you? Like, right? Again, we have to remember that many of these old, ancient kind of teachings about meditation and mindfulness were written and created by who? What? What? Monks, nuns, sadhu, you know, people, you know, this was their full time, right? And they didn't, you know, they didn't have jobs. Notice that. None of these guys or women had jobs. They didn't have families, right? They didn't have the full catastrophe, as we say. You see what, you know what I mean? So, you know, if you're living in the mountains in a cave or you're living in the forest, you know what I'm saying, and you really don't have any worldly involvement, it's not that difficult to have a very peaceful mind. Right? But you see what I'm saying? But most of us these days, we're very engaged in life. And this modern life is what? Hectic, full of information. You're processing information all the time, right? True? So don't expect that somehow you're going to, you know, unless you have very powerful concentration. Some people do, right? But that's very few. Okay? So don't expect when all of a sudden you come to practice, your mind's going to be like absolutely at zero, you see? And so, you know, it's what Hunter was asking before. That's why I think for our modern age, this kind of broader kind of mindfulness is really what's important, right? In other words, can you be okay with your distracted mind? Can you be at peace with your distracted mind? Can you just say to yourself, distracted mind? And be at peace. And watch the thoughts come and go. See, that's mindfulness. Right? It's like I said earlier. Everybody could be jumping around in here, but as long as I'm not jumping around, right? I'm at peace. Your mind, are you telling your mind to jump around? No. Right? You're telling your mind, be quiet. It doesn't listen to you. You know, it's like me trying to get everybody to, you know, pay attention, right? You see what I'm saying? That it's okay. I don't have to get agitated. I don't have to get upset, do I? Because nobody's listening to me. All right, then. You have to, again, when you sit down to meditate, before you jump into your meditation, take a few moments to remind yourself why you're meditating. So you just don't sit down to it like, now I'm going to meditate. Okay? That's first big mistake. You know, there has to be some preparation. You sit down, you relax, you remind yourself, why am I meditating? What is the purpose? Okay? You see? And remind yourself what the practice is. So this is what I'm going to be doing. Okay? The next thing I'd say to you is small bites, right? You know, if you get how long do you sit in the morning? You sit 15 minutes. So maybe I'd say to you, maybe break your 15 minutes into 3 5-minute periods. Yeah. Right, but if you find that, you know, you can keep the enthusiasm or the interest for 5 minutes, but at 7 you begin to lose it, then maybe just aim for 6. It's a skill. There's a competency. Is that clear? So you want to kind of work in increments out that work for you. And, you know, you're building up your strength, right? But also, you know, we can't separate meditation from our daily life, you see. This is why, you know, the study and the practice of Buddhism, Buddha Dharma, is so essential. If you only take one piece, you may not get much results. Because the question is, why am I always thinking about these things? Right? Maybe I'm obsessed by things in life. You see, there may be a reason why certain kinds of thoughts are so difficult, you know, and rather than trying to control them with meditation, maybe it's better that we look at our life and go, why is this so important to me? Why do I hang on to this? Right? I mean, the past is over. The future hasn't come. And yet, we find in our minds we're obsessed with all these things. So, learning the teachings, right, the Dharma, is also feeds your meditation practice, and vice versa. You know, we can't, if you're thinking, well, 15 minutes of meditation a day, I'll be a transformed human being, it's not going to work that way, is it? Right? As we say, we're alive all day, and we have to see, yeah, I mean, you know, what are the things that I'm obsessing about? What are the things that I keep coming back to? You know, they're not going on now, right? But yet my mind is constantly wanting to think about them or go over them. Why is that? See, that's getting a little into kind of how we live our life. You know, maybe we're just too obsessed by life. And we hold on to things, and we grasp things, and we mull over things, and we obsess about things. Right? So, again, if that's, you know, I'm not saying you, but I mean, if that's kind of your mind all day, and then you come to your 15 minutes of meditation and expect peace and bliss, you're going to be disappointed. So, you know, the way we live our life has a lot to do with how we do our meditation and the way we do our, you know, you want it to be one over time. Okay? Well, let me, okay, now things are picking up. Okay. Okay. It must be Sunday morning. It's hard to get people kind of going here. All right, yes. Yeah.
My distractions are often related to the suffering that's going on.
Yeah.
Something that I might have been saying when I was mothering my children.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Well, again, I think it's okay, Brian. Yeah, so the question is, yeah, the things that really distract me or I get caught up in when I meditate is not things from the past or future, but it's just awareness of the suffering of other people, family, friends, the world. I mean, there's enough suffering to go around, isn't there? Again, I would say this comes back to what I just said, you know. It's very, you know, the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha began. You know, the Four Noble Truths, right? That was his first, the Four Noble Truths. First one is what? Life is suffering. It doesn't have to be suffering, but he looked around. He said, that's the way it is. Okay. And that's important that we reflect on that. I mean, in our teaching side, we reflect on that a lot, you know, on the truth of suffering. dukkha. But then the second noble truth is there's a cause of suffering. It's not just happening, you know, because the gods are playing with us or some random. No, there's cause and effect. There are some things we might say are natural catastrophes or natural, you know, sickness, old age, and death, and other things. But so much of the suffering of the world is created by people to each other. Why do people do that? Because they're suffering, because they're ignorant, because they're narcissistic, because they're egocentric, because they're only thinking about themselves, because their minds are just filled with delusion. Okay? That's the cause of it. Okay? But there's an end to it, right? If people change, the world will change. Okay. That is why I'm on the cushion, you see. See, at some point, it's not like we become indifferent to the suffering of the world, but we understand that's why I'm practicing, so I can be of benefit to the world, so I can help people, and help people in the most essential way, which is the suffering that's in their own minds. How best can I help them? By really understanding my own mind, my own suffering, and transforming it. So, sort of the suffering of the world and the suffering of other people becomes what energizes your practice, rather than something to... it's like today, you know, people watch the news obsessively. How much news do you need to read or listen to understand the world is what? What? It's a mess. Do we need every day to go into it? You know, deeply into it? The backstory? It's like if you work in a hospital, do you have to really, you know, every day ask yourself, why are there sick people here? Sick people are in the hospital. That's all that's in the hospital, sick people. Okay? What's going on in this world? There are a lot of sick people, aren't there? A lot of deluded people, a lot of ignorant people, a lot of scared people, a lot of angry people, a lot of self-centered people, right? Well, you know, you let them run loose, what are they going to do? Create suffering for themselves and others. Even if they don't want to, they do it. That's the way it is, you see. We don't stand outside that and go, it shouldn't be that way. Yeah, in some ideal Disneyland universe, right, everybody, you know, everything's good. Right? If you want everything good, go to Disneyland. Right? Everything is good. Everybody's happy, you know. Everything clean, you know, right? There's no suffering in Disney World. Yeah, that's why people probably like to go there. But, you know, the reality of the world is what? It's not like there aren't a lot of good things. I mean, there's lots of wonderful goodness in this world, but there's so much suffering. That's just the way it is. Not like the way it is like, oh, that's okay, you see. It's just like a fact. And the issue is, okay, if that's the fact, what am I going to do about it? That's all. Right? It's like, you know, if you work in the hospital, you don't have to every day obsess about the suffering of the people in the hospital, right? They're all suffering. But you're going there, why? To help them, to alleviate. Yeah, that's it. That's where your focus is. And that's good, you see. That's good energy. That won't drain you. But if you go to the hospital every day, you know, just bemoaning, you know, the reality of that, one, it'll only drain you. And two, it won't make you a better able to help them, will it? No. Okay? Thank you. Yes?
I had a frame earlier, but I don't know, so I'm just going to throw some words out at you.
I'm good.
Okay, so you were talking earlier to the gentleman's question about being caught up in the things that you're going through. And I know that the goal is to stay focused in your present, but then also you have these issues from your past, which helping reflecting on those.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how to balance or how to create that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the question is, yeah, in some ideal world, I could just put everything down and just, you know, focus on developing this inner stillness and awareness. But you're saying, but I'm also going through life and working on myself, as we say, and, you know, there's stuff to be dealt with, right? And how do you balance the two? And that's, you know, again, I think that's just a fact of modern life. You know, if you read the ancient teachings, you know, they were, again, up in caves. They were, you know, they weren't dealing with their stuff, right? In our modern culture, what are we dealing with? Stuff. And even when we get our stuff together, we have to deal with everybody else's stuff, right? I mean, that just seems to be the nature of our modern world. But I would say, again, it is much easier to deal with your stuff if you can deal with it from a place of mindfulness and awareness. Okay. This is the key thing. See, many people, they read about mindfulness, you know, I could be mindful of my emotions, mindfulness of my stuff. But what the truth is, their stuff is very strong and their mindfulness is very weak. And so when they, from good intentions, you know, enter their stuff, you know, the strong emotionality, the stories, the, you know, trying to be mindful, they very easily get swept into it because the story is stronger than their mindfulness. Okay. So there's got to be a balance, but we got to understand that, you know, we have to build up strength. It's like going to the gym, you know, you just can't walk in there and press 150 pounds, right? But you can. Well, 250 pounds, right? I mean, you see what I'm saying? You go, well, of course not. I have to build up. And we have to kind of know our own capability, even in working on our stuff, to go, some of this stuff is really big, strong. I just can't kind of do a frontal assault on it because my mindfulness is not strong enough to withstand that, right? So we have to understand that we are building a skill, a competency that takes time. At the same time, to understand that, you know, maybe I just need to deal with it in pieces, right? Not just jump into the whole thing. Kind of, you know, work with what I can work with. And then slowly, as my strength develops, go deeper into it. But I think, you know, one has to be in connection with oneself, right? And one can, you know, I think often just naming it and knowing what it is. It's sort of like we were saying with the gentleman back there. He says, you know, I can see this stuff, you know, trying to push me. And, you know, I guess I'd say the same thing to you. Well, in the present, how do you want to relate to that stuff? You know, it's like a lot of times people say, well, you know, a lot of times, you know, in the midst of work or relate, you can't always, you know, take 10 minutes for a timeout and you know, that's true. So sometimes you got to just put it on the shelf. You know, because you got other life responsibilities, you got work, you got family, you got things you got to take care of. So, you know, we can't be in process all the time, right? But at the same time, you can kind of go, ooh, you know, your mindfulness is beginning to reveal to you what's going on in your mind. We might never have been aware of it. We might just have been driven by it, but now you're aware of it. And, you know, when you have the time and the space, you can bring it up, right? Is that clear? But you know, you have to, again, it's like going to the gym, you know, you don't want to, you know, take on more than you can work with. Right? And again, everybody is different. Everybody has different lives, other responsibilities. You know, we have to know ourselves. Yeah, I mean, you know, I can still be happy even if I got a lot of stuff. I'm just aware I got a lot of stuff. And I don't let it take me over the way it used to. I can see it, I can name it, I can give some space around it. You know, and at the right time, I can, you know, enter into that process of healing and transformation. But that takes time. You can't just kind of you know, do it 5 minutes here and 3 minutes there and 10 minutes there. It's a process. You know, that's why, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, he calls the path, this path, it's a path of healing and transformation. You know, again, if you read the old text, it was always about transformation. But I think there's an acknowledgement that in our current world, there's a lot of healing that has to go on, right? There's a lot of pain that that people have accumulated in their life, right? Perhaps more than in days past, maybe not. It's a different world. You know, less supports, there's a lot going on in our world. And so, the healing component is very important.